You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast.
And I'm feeling the pressure because you just called me an expert of all teams, which is absolutely frightening.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I'm a Brewers fan, so I've never seen a World Series victory. I'm not lucky like our San Francisco fans.
But so far it's working for him. I don't think he's a bad owner. I think he's just a bad person.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Last time I was in Florida, neither team existed. I've heard that the Marlins have an amazingly beautiful park that no one goes to. And Tampa Bay has a really shitty one that no one goes to.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Hello, everyone. This is Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I am hosting a show, so we're doing a little role reversal here. I am Chuck Anderson. I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. My cyber friend, since we've never actually met in person yet, but hopefully we'll accomplish that some point soon. Justin Mason is with us. He is an expert on all teams, and he's going to help me preview the Miami Marlins for you guys today. How's Justin?
Justin is doing okay. It's a little uncomfortable being in the non-host chair for once, though I do actually prefer that. Hosting is a little bit more difficult, I think, than people kind of give it credit for. And I'm feeling the pressure because you just called me an expert of all teams, which is absolutely frightening.
Well, you know, we play this game that we love called fantasy baseball, and we have to have brushes with each team and with each team's roster. But this is the time in the off season that we fine tune our knowledge and sort of try and extend it out to our listeners. So you and I are going to try and do that right now. And this is not a team that is per se native to either one of us, because you know my brother actually lives in Florida, and I've been to the Rays Stadium a few times, but my first time to the Marlins Stadium is going to happen late this summer. So have you had a chance to be to either of the Florida team stadiums before, Justin?
I have not. I moved to the West Coast over a decade ago, and other than being stationed on the East Coast and much farther north in Florida, I haven't really been back very much. So neither team, last time I was in Florida, neither team existed. So,
wow.
I mean, that's how long it's been since I've been to Florida. So I would love to. I mean, I've heard that the Marlins have an amazingly beautiful park that no one goes to. And Tampa Bay has a really shitty one that no one goes to.
Yeah, I can say definitively, my wife insists on going on a baseball vacation every summer, and my wife and I have been to over a dozen stadiums, and the Rays Stadium is by far the worst one. But I have heard glowing reviews of the Marlins Stadium as well, and I've heard that it's not hard to get tickets. So we'll see how that all goes. I've never been on South Beach, so. My brother's a native of Florida these days, so he poo-poos the idea of it being all touristy. But other than that, let's start talking about the Marlins, who are a team that's in a really interesting spot. And we didn't really preview everything we're going to do together, but one thing that fascinates me about the Marlins is, can a tragedy like what happened to Jose Fernandez at the end of the season, is that something that can have a layover effect in so much as it can really affect their fantasy performers the next year? Do you think that's possible, Justin?
I mean, anything is possible, and I've talked a tremendous amount about the that players aren't just like numbers. They aren't people like in video games. That real life things can have an effect on them. We talk about Gene Segura and what happened with his son and losing him, and that being, you know, obviously weighing on him while in Milwaukee, and seemingly has broken out of it after being traded to Arizona, and now he's in Seattle. But I mean, I tend not to buy into a ton of those kind of narratives because, one, I think they're impossible to measure. You have no idea who's going to rise to the occasion and who's going to have things affect them. And I mean, I think with the Jose Fernandez situation, as awful as it was, I think for the most part, I would assume that that enough time has passed by the start of the season where it won't affect them. There may be games in which the Marlins do things to honor him. And that may have an effect in those individual games, but I think over the course of 162 games, we probably won't have that kind of issue pop up.
Well, you know, it's curious because another time that I think we've seen a full display besides Gene Segura is I've noticed that with Chris Colabello and with D. Gordon, who's obviously a Marlin we're going to have to touch on here, when they find out that they have a suspension coming and they're still playing, which of course is ridiculous in and of itself, that they play for a 3 to 4 week period knowing that they're going to get suspended. I think that's another situation that really has a tendency to affect players. I think they have a hard time playing through that. And since we touched on them, even though it's a little out of our initial order, I am not big on D. Gordon, which goes against my general thought. I've always thought that the player is the player. You know, Ryan Braun was a really good player before, during, and after his PED usage. And that's, I feel differently about D. Gordon to an extent just because of how his categories fall. You know, if for whatever reason, if he takes a step back in batting average, to me, he's a hard player to own, even with a ton of steals. He becomes, you know, Billy Hamilton heavy if he's hitting, you know, 255 instead of hitting over 300. So since we touched on it in a back order kind of way, how do you feel about D. Gordon this year?
I mean, I feel fine about D. Gordon as a player. I like him. I think he offers an elite category, but he's one of those guys, if you take him, it then alters the rest of your draft or auction. So you have to obviously account for that. Do I think you can pencil him in for 40 plus steals? Yeah, I do. And so for that, to me, he's worth kind of the price of admission. The only thing I would say about D. Gordon in terms of 2017 is that he's not really going at a huge discount. If you look at where he is going on NFBC drafts, he's currently going as the 47th player off the board. So to me, you know, last year he was probably going in the second round in between 20 and 30. So considering he missed 80 games last year due to a suspension, you're only getting about a 2-round discount at this point. I thought you'd be getting more, and I'm sure on certain formats you will get more of a discount, depending on where you draft and where their ranks kind of schedule him. You may, but according to NFBC, which is what we usually use in terms of comparing draft results because it comes out the earliest, it seems to be filled with the best players. People are taking him in the top 3 to 4 rounds, which I'm fine with doing. I'm totally fine taking him in the top 50, but you're not getting the discount I think I thought he would go for earlier in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe we've got a backlog enough that we know that players really, they're good regardless of the enhancement that comes along with, you know, with the steroid issue, or the, in this case, I think it was supposed to be like sort of a supplement oriented issue. But it's an interesting overview to see now exactly how this is all going to play out. If we're going to see any players come back and not be a version of them, of their former self. And we're basically in agreement because I just don't have a tendency to build my teams around the one steal player. you know, get steals and then not worry about it everywhere. I have a tendency to like players who do some of everything. So D. Gordon doesn't usually fall into my plans, although I've owned him for years in a long-term keeper league where I got him on the way up when it was only $2. So the other thing that I want to look at here about an organizational thing is in our minds we have sort of this completely black and white binary thing that an organization doesn't really affect the players or their fantasy numbers. But at some level, the Marlins organization has been riddled with controversy. You know, their Mr. Lurie, their owner, has been a very controversial figure. You hear people asking for him to sell the team, etc. Despite the fact that they've managed to win World Series, which is always a very interesting thing to me. But the question comes to the point of, does the overview of the organization, does that create a discount on the players, or does it actually make you think, well, the Marlins are going to kind of screw things up, and so overall that's going to hurt the players' numbers? How do you feel about that issue?
I don't necessarily subscribe to that from an organizational point of view, unless it is a situation where it seems pretty obvious that the team is going to be selling at some point. Or even buying at some point. And I don't think the Marlins really fall into either category. I mean, they've got a pretty decent offense that should be able to keep them somewhat competitive early on. And I don't really see, you know, the kind of players that they would necessarily sell at the deadline anyways on this roster. So I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about that as much as I would be worried if, you know, for some reason there were rumors that Ozuna was going to get moved, Stanton was going to get moved, Prado was going to get moved, someone like that. But at this point, it sounds like the Ozuna rumors have kind of quieted down. And obviously they've got Stanton locked into such a long-term deal. I can't imagine they'd be able to move him.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I subscribe to the same thing that you do. I mean, there are a group of guys out there on the field that are playing together. I don't think that they spend every day thinking to themselves, oh, well, I'm different than other major league players because I play on the Marlins. I think that's more of a media, driven thing. And I always struggle because I'm a Brewers fan. So I've never seen a World Series victory. I'm not lucky like our San Francisco fans. So the point being is that, okay, give me a terrible owner who gets me World Series championships. I could live with that. I really could. More so than the media wants to look at, you know, them buying players and then selling them all off, which has been a factor in years past, but I do sort of think that zone is over with. So you and I are much on the same page when we look at them as an organization. They do have a tendency to develop good players over time. Actually, they develop great players. They don't develop a lot of good players, if that makes any sense. So, you know, and we'll get into more than that as we get into their personnel, and which we'll do right now. I mean,
well, hold on. Go ahead, buddy. Before we do, because I mean, I want to kind of shoot down the notion that Loria is a bad owner. You know, he gets a bad rap in the media because of the things he does, and the things he does are what we would consider unethical. But I don't think that makes him a bad owner. I mean, how many teams have won two World Series in general, but in the last 20 years? And he did it with a strategy that he employed that worked. He bought a bunch of players, won a World Series, then sold them off for, you know, prospects and parts and whatever. You know, the strategy has worked twice. And like you said, as a Brewers fan, I'm sure you wish your owner would pony up, you know, for 2 years out of every decade to get them a World Series. You know, the thing is, the media and the players keep falling for this strategy. Players keep signing these, you know, long-term deals with the Marlins, going, I'm going to make this a home because they're telling me that we're going to turn this into a long-term contender. And they're being duped every time. Now, I think you're starting to see players go, oh, maybe that isn't smart. Maybe I shouldn't sign there, you know, because they can't seem to sign a pitcher. for the roster because the rotation is just absolutely atrocious. But you know, I don't fault him as an owner. Yeah, he's figured out ways to get MLB to support his stadium and a city to pay for his stadium, and MLB supports the team. Well, that's not the owner's fault. He's playing by the rules. He's doing everything he should be doing to make himself profitable. Now, is it going to have long-term impact? Sure. But so far, it's working for him. I don't think he's a bad owner. I think he's just a bad person.
And there's something to be said for that. It's funny because when I look for analogies within the sport we're speaking of or outside the sport, right? You know, I remember, and I'm old enough to remember, you know, Jerry Jones as the Cowboys coach, you know, booting Tom Landry, and everyone said, oh, it's so unethical, and, you know, this, that, and everything else. And, you know, he's a focal point of criticism about the new NFL, if you will. But he has a tendency to build a ginormous roster around a huge offensive line that just mows everyone down. Now, the old-time baseball analogy would be Marge Schott, who is someone who obviously was not a good person as far as, you know, being that older generation that had some bigotry or had some, you know, had some hatred towards different minority groups that we certainly want to get past as a society. But at the same time, I remember living baseball under Marge Schott's time in the league, thinking the Reds are good all the time with very little payroll investment. So I think as fans, we get in this zone where you have to say to yourself, well, okay, there's this ethical high road, but guess what? My fandom says I want to see my team win. So there's definitely both of those things at play, and I think your points are very well taken, sir. But I think we should probably get into their roster now a little bit. And when you look at the strengths of the Miami Marlins, I think the strength is definitely in their outfield. You know, they have 50 home run potential in their super stud, Giancarlo Stanton. But they've also got two sort of lurking definite talents that surround Stanton in the outfield in Marcell Ozuna and Christian Yelich. Which one of these guys are you highest on? Which one do you think is going to be the best draft value this year, Justin?
Well, I mean, I'm technically highest on Stanton, but I mean, I wouldn't say I'm high on him by any stretch of the imagination, and I don't think he offers any draft value. So, I mean, if we're going to go with draft value, it's probably between Christian Yelich and Ozuna. It depends on what you believe in terms of Yelich's kind of home run, uptick we saw last year, and the speed downtick. You know, he went from 7 home runs and 16 stolen bases to 21 home runs and 9 stolen bases. And, I mean, there isn't a whole lot other than maybe a juiced ball to kind of tell you what the hell is going on. So, I mean, you know, yeah, he hit the ball harder. He pulled the ball more, so maybe that's why. But you got to wonder if the juice ball effect has much to do with that in terms of how many home runs he did hit, because it's a pretty substantial jump. If he can keep the power, which I think he can keep most of it, and maybe gain back a little bit of speed, or a little bit of the stolen bases, I think you're looking at a guy who's ready for a real breakout in Major League Baseball and for fantasy teams. And so far, I mean, he's not going at an unreasonable rate in drafts. He's the 14th outfielder off the board, 56 overall. I think that's pretty fair value, and I wouldn't mind taking him, because he's one of those guys that I feel offers pretty overall production, which is really nice, because then you don't have to worry about your team construct after that pick.
Well, I like the approach you took to this, because my stance on it is this is a risk aversion scale kind of outfield, meaning, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, I believe in more in his upside than most. And my concern, obviously, is his health. You know, he's this sort of muscle-bound athletic freak that we don't know exactly how many games we're going to get out of. But when he hits these monstrous blasts, he's very, very fun to own. And he can go through streaks of incredible power, you know, supply. Now, The thing about Yelich is a lot of the stuff that I've heard in the offseason has talked about his ground ball rate being amongst the highest in all of Major League Baseball. But I still agree with you that he has been usable, you know, during this whole stretch, his whole ascension, his sort of his performance plane is streaking up. And you have a guy that's always a usable piece in your outfield, and he's going at a time in the draft where you need someone that's generally going to be usable, because you haven't loaded up on outfield earlier than that, and you know you're going to have to take some gambles in the outfield after that. So I like Christian Yelich's value the most. The thing about Ozuna is that Ozuna started off last year hot as a pistol, and then, you know, then he bottomed out towards the end of the season. And what we have in Ozuna is a player who's been the opposite. Looked like he was going to be good 1 year. Then the next year, he ended up spending some time in the minors because he was so bad. So we have a very uneven player. So, you know, even though the potential rewards for where you draft them, to me, are higher with Stanton and higher with Ozuna, the safety and the zone on where they get drafted means to me that you have to go, you have to be happiest about owning Yelich. Do you agree with that line of thought, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would be most likely to own Yelich. I like Ozuna, and I like where he's going. 164th overall, 37th outfielder off the board. But I mean, in a 12-team or 15-team league, that's putting Ozuna as your number two or three or four outfielder. I'd feel much better about him being my number four as opposed to my number two or three. You know, Stanton's an interesting case because Stanton's one of those guys that he has all the potential in the world. I mean, like you said, he could hit 50 bombs. He could hit 60 bombs. Would I be surprised if Stanton one day breaks Barry Bonds' home run record, single-season home run record? No, because he has the power to do it even in that large stadium. But the problem, and that's why he gets drafted so high, that's why people rank him so high, is because of that immense power production and potential. But here's the thing with Stanton. Stanton has turned into a higher upside version of Chris Davis. I mean, he doesn't steal bases really anymore, at least he hasn't the last two seasons. You throw in the injury risk. He doesn't hit for average anymore. He's hit 240 and 265 the last two seasons. He's only one time hit 290 or above, and that was back in 2012. So, I mean, at some point we have to start kind of downgrading him for the fact that he doesn't offer overall production. And he does go extremely high. You've got to pay for it unless you've got him cheaply for some reason in a keeper league. He's currently the number 8th outfielder going off the board, 39th, almost 40th overall on NFBC's ADP. That's ridiculous. There's no rationale that you should be taking him that high.
Well, I have a tendency to agree with you, but the reason that I took the risk aversion approach was because some people do play fantasy as if they want to win the league, or they want to finish towards the bottom of the league. In other words, they don't play to be competitive. They play to dominate.
Yes, and if you're playing like in the NFBC main event, Stan's one of those guys that can help you win a league. Like, yeah, you know, so I get that, but at the same time, like, fantasy baseball is a grind. It is a 162-game season. It's played over the course of 5-plus months. Like, if you think you're going to win your league with one player and it not be a grind either way, then you're playing the wrong sport.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I see that as well. I guess it's so opposite of how I construct a roster, but in all the, you know, and all the live drafts that I play in, and I play in a lot of live drafts, it seems like there's always one smoking gun in the room, one wild man in the room that wants to take, these high upside gambles. And it's curious, and later this week, I'm recording a Nats podcast, but it gets to the point where at some point, are we going to think that Giancarlo Stanton is just a few years ahead of the performance track, track record that we have going for Bryce Harper? Because Bryce Harper seems to be this kind of a player as well, where he's got this incredible upside so far, because Bryce Harper is so young, but so far he's got this incredible potential. And so it's curious to make that comparison between those two players. I don't blame anyone for drafting Stanton, and I'm obviously a little bit higher on him than you are. I always thought that the batting average was going to be the question. Always, always, always. Back in 2013, I looked at his track record and I said, well, with his plate approach, with how hard he swings, with everything else, the long-term batting average is going to be the issue. But to me, I wouldn't be surprised if he got lucky with balls in play. He's a guy who hits the ball so hard that if he gets half fooled, when he's half fooled, that's when he has a chance to line doubles and line singles, because he's so muscle-bound that it would not stun me if he hit 270 this year. And if he hits 270 and he gets you, 48-plus bombs, he's a guy that can be a very integral piece in a dominating season. But the real question is, what would you put the over-under on games played? How many games do you think Stanton will play this year, Justin?
I mean, that's an interesting question. Because, I've been a huge proponent the last couple years that he's not injury-prone guy. That the injuries prior to last season were the kind that were just unfortunate incidents. He got hit in the face with a ball. Like, you can't say that makes him injury-prone. Last season, though, there were more injuries that you could start saying those kind of things. I'll give him 140 games, and hope for the best, because I'm not ready to say that he's a guy that you have to, weigh in huge amount of injury risk. Here's my question to you, though, is I don't understand the rationale between saying you don't want D. Gordon because he only offers production in two or three categories, but you do want Stanton, who only offers production in two or three categories.
Well, and you certainly don't have to buy this, but my reaction to that goes twofold. Number one, D. Gordon is a middle infielder. Okay, and middle infield has just ballooned with talent in recent years. And I come from the perspective that you need six or seven outfielders on your full roster. And so outfield isn't as deep. And the other thing that is probably irrational, but is my rationality regardless, is that I despise National League leadoff hitters. I have as few of them as I possibly can. And I know D. Gordon hasn't always just hit leadoff in Miami. But it's just the idea that hitting behind the pitcher means that, unlike if everything fell right for Stanton, you could get batting average, home runs, RBIs, and runs from him. And I don't think you have that opportunity with Gordon, because where he's going to hit in the lineup after pitchers that flail woefully at the plate and end large rallies that don't happen for American League leadoff hitters, even, that I would rather have the middle of the lineup style player if I'm targeting one necessary statistical category. And, do you see that?
And I mean, I disagree with you on the depth of the outfield, and this is something I'm sure we'll argue about more in the future. Because I think the outfield is deeper than you would than you do. No arguments in terms of the depth of second base. Second base is extremely deep. It's probably the second deepest position in fantasy this year. So if you're just wanting to save money and go after outfielder early, I can get that, and I can buy that at least. I may disagree with the strategy. Here's what I'll say about what the upside they offer is. I mean, D, you're saying the upside of Stanton is, four category production. I mean, that's the same thing. It's just four different categories for D. Gordon. I mean, D. Gordon has offered better averages more recently. He offers runs, stolen bases. Well, I guess he doesn't. He offers three because he doesn't hit home runs. So you're right. So three to four. I'll give you that one, I guess. For some reason, I was thinking D. Gordon would offer either RBIs or home runs, and obviously he doesn't, except for when they're playing in memory of Jose Fernandez.
that's a good point, and that was a great moment of last year's season. Considering
they
how
just honor
the
him
timing of everything,
yeah, well, they should just honor him every game.
Then D. Gordon owners will pop up everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's interesting because as we go from the outfield to the infield, we see a much different situation going on in Miami, meaning that there's. You know, when you go from left to right, you have Martin Prado, who's a guy that, you know, you can use his roster fill late, and he's probably not going to hurt you, but he's probably not going to do anything spectacular to help you. You know, and then, we already touched on D. Gordon, who's sort of their upside guy. But then we have two interesting figures to me. One especially interesting figure in Justin Bour. I'm wondering if you think Justin Bour is more like long-term like Mitch Moreland or more like Mike Napoli. And Napoli may seem like an odd comp at first, but I use Napoli because Napoli's a guy who's had a lot of ebbs and flows in his career. A lot of people thought Bour was a good sleeper for power last year, and he ended up on a lot of waiver wires just because, how it distributed itself over time. So do you think Justin Bour is more long-term Mitch Moreland or more maybe long-term Mike Napoli with sneaky power?
I think he's more Mike Napoli in terms of having sneaky power because he only had 321 plate appearances, hit 15 home runs. I mean, if for some reason he can play a full season this year and you're able to somewhat double that, you're looking at a guy who can hit 25 to 30 home runs. I just don't know if you can guarantee that, and I worry that there's a chance he gets overexposed the longer he is at the major league level. I mean, he's only really been playing in the major leagues for, I don't know, 250 games or something like that. So I don't think he's an extremely talented guy, but there's no one else in that system right now that is really going to challenge him for at-bats. He could lose playing time, you know, here and there, you know, due to injury or due to the fact that he can't really hit lefties at all. But, I mean, are they really planning on, you know, starting someone like Miguel Rojas or Derek Dietrich at first base on a regular basis? I mean, unless they bring someone in, you know, they bring in a right-handed bat at first base, I think he's going to get the majority of the playing time, and in that case, he could offer some sneaky power.
Yeah, I mean, he's in an interesting spot here because, you know, he's definitely down the list of first basemen. I think you've got the fantasy benefits rankings out there, and I would be curious as to, you know, sort of what the range is of his that we have so far for his rankings. But he's not somebody. He's not somebody that you want as your first baseman, and I think he's borderline in a 12-team league for somebody that you really want as your corner infielder. So he's going to end up on a lot of reserve lists is what my take is on where he's probably going to land. Do you see it as somewhat in that zone?
I mean, in 12-team leagues, for sure. But that's kind of the place I would want him. I would want him as a backup. I don't want him as a guy I've got to stick into my lineup every day. I don't want to play him in a 15-team league or NL only because I don't know if there's going to be platoon issues and he's going to end up sitting almost as often as he starts. I mean, we currently have him on the Friends Fantasy Benefits website as the number 26 first baseman. Or sorry, the number 30th. I have him 26. I believe you have him 23rd. And we're the high men on him. So, I mean, that kind of tells you. And, like, just even looking at the ranks right now, I'm seeing people that I wouldn't mind dropping him below. I currently have him above Mitch Moreland, and I think I drop him below Mitch Moreland. Is he really that much better than Justin Smoke, who's got platoon issues as well, and playing in a better park in the American League?
Well, you know, those two guys I would have a tendency to say that we've had longer track records from those guys.
Sure.
So Moreland's
got a really nice opportunity here. Who knows, you know, what the playing time situation will shake out over the course of the entire season. But going right now into the season, like, he's the everyday first baseman or DH.
Yeah, I see that. I'm a guy who's been heavily vested in Moreland in recent years and has largely came out disappointed. But I mean, I certainly see the point about him going to the best, you know, the best offense in baseball. Mm-hmm. Really, you can argue with what's happened to Toronto, you know, this offseason, losing players and such. But at the same time, if I was going to play devil's advocate to your theory, I mean, he really was in a pretty good situation in Texas too. And, you know, Texas had all kinds of problems with Josh Hamilton injuries and lineup issues. So he's had a pretty good opportunity in the past as well.
And that's fair. Boston's got a lot of guys they could just throw into the DH spot, keep Hanley at first, and Moreland loses playing time.
But no, you know, but I think our point is intact that this is a curious guy because we don't necessarily know who he is yet. You know, the end of his rookie season, he turned into everyone's favorite sleeper for power the next year. Then this last year, he got hurt and he didn't play as much. You know, and he was streaky when he did play last year. So he has very, very strong potential to be a huge draft value, in my opinion, this coming season. You just don't want to overly invest for it because I'd say there's like a 20 to 30% chance that he's going to live up to a lot of this sleeper potential that we're speaking of. So, you know, I definitely see that. I do. Well, let's move on to a very interesting player to me, and he is actually of the top 10 catchers. He is definitely the value that intrigues me the most, and that is one JT Realmuto, who offers the rare opportunity to get some speed and some batting average behind the dish. Are you as big a fan of Realmuto as I am?
I really am. I mean, I love the fact that he offers positive value at a position in which you can get a lot of guys who will give you negative value. You know, he doesn't give you much pop. It's only, you know, 10, 11 home runs the last 2 years. But yeah, the extra speed is nice. The fact that he can hit for average, do I expect him to hit for 303 next season? No, of course not. You know, I mean, he that was inflated by, you know, a 357 BABIP. But, I mean, if he, you know, he could probably hit in the 270 to 280 range. And at catcher, that means you can take, a batting average anchor somewhere else on your team.
So, I like it too. I really do. This profile is a good profile for a catcher.
Especially
it really
if
is.
You can get him as a second catcher. I mean, like, you know, if you can pair him with, you know, like an Evan Gattis, so you're getting the power from Gattis, but you're supplementing that average with Realmuto. You know, I really like it. You know, NFBC, he's going 116 overall, which I think is fair and in the right area. But I've seen him go way later in other mocks that I've been in. And that to me is like the value. Maybe NFBC leagues, he's going to go a little high because people see the value that he brings. But in your Yahoo, ESPN leagues, he's going at a much cheaper rate in the couple mock drafts that I've gone through so far. So, I mean, to me, I think he is. I think he's got some really nice sneaky value, and he's underrated because he's not the flashiest guy, and he doesn't offer a shit ton of power, which is, you know, usually you want your catcher to hit you 20-plus home runs. Well, there aren't many guys that can do that on a regular basis, you know. Let other people take the Gary Sanchez's and the Wilson Contreras. I'm totally happy with JT Realmuto.
Well, you know, he's the opposite of Yasmani Grandal. Yasmani Grandal is just, he's going to pull everything, and, you know, he's not going to hit 250 almost under any circumstances. Grandal isn't. And Realmuto is the opposite of that. Now, I will tell you, you know, from my experience, and one of these years I'm going to get you in one of these leagues so you get the experience because it's really a neat fantasy experience. But NFBC rankings right now will be all draft and hold leagues. They haven't even really started any of their satellite leagues. So you are looking at all two catcher leagues where you cannot pick anyone up during the season. And I personally believe that that makes a big difference, because single catcher leagues and leagues where you have a waiver wire, you know, look at some of the guys last year, you know, Sandy Leon, think about, you know, how he saved people at catcher last year for large stretches of the season. People have a tendency to come out of the woodwork at catcher. You know, I mean, in recent years, Jared Saltalamacchia went from a backup to a guy who was going to give you 15 home runs, you know, off the waiver wire. You don't have that in those NFBC drafts. So I can tell you outright that catcher and relief pitcher, those are the ones that you're going to find that players really, really get inflated, if they're in their early ADP values. That point should not be lost on the fact that I think JT Realmuto, for a kid his age, really looks to have a strong performance arc, you know, plane going at catcher. So I like him a lot. And obviously we're on the same page with Realmuto overall. So let's move on to starting pitcher, which is going to be trickier. Like, the last pod that I recorded was the Brewers for starting pitchers, and now I feel like I've been in a wasteland of starting pitcher in back-to-back study sessions here. I mean, I've got sort of a flyer on their roster that I like, which, you know, is probably going to turn your stomach, and you'll need to compare it to where his ADP is to know that I'm not completely, you know, completely gone to lunacy. But is there, if you had to invest in a Marlins pitcher, which one would you invest in?
I mean, there's two guys that I'm interested in terms of starting pitchers on the Marlins. And they're two guys that I've liked for the last couple years. You know, Adam Conley was a prospect in the Giants organization he was not a prospect in the Giants organization. He was drafted by the Marlins. But I like what I saw out of him last season. The only issue is kind of the DL since we saw last year with him. And so the health for me is the only issue. And so I'm a little worried that maybe we won't get a full slate of innings, because he only threw 133 last year. He ended with injury issues. Will we see him get any more? But I mean, I think he's a guy that, especially in NL only leagues, could be valuable, 15-team mixed leagues, because the Marlins have a fantastic stadium for his skill set, and he's one of those guys that could take advantage of it if he's healthy. So I'm pretty sure he's going extremely late in NFBC. I'd have to kind of scroll down the starting pitcher ranks, and I'm going to talk very slowly while I do to try to find him. He's currently going as the 81st pitcher off the board, 313th overall. Which I like. I like the value there. It's not an amazing value, and he's going in the area of other guys that I like as well, including the next Marlins pitcher I'm going to talk about. But I do like Conley. I think he has some growth potential as a guy who could potentially next season, you know, be at 8.5 strikeouts per nine, limit the walks a little bit more than he did last season. And we're looking at a guy who's throwing, you know, 3.4, 3.5 ERA with a passable whip. So Conley's a guy I like as a sleeper. Weiying Chen, I think, is being underdrafted. I know last year was awful. It was absolutely atrocious. He went from a stadium in which he was able to tame the home run issues in Baltimore, in spite of the fact that it's a home run park, to a stadium that's not a home run park in the National League, and gave up too many home runs. You know, part of it was fueled by a 302 BABIP, which I think will come down. And part of it, I think, was, you know, probably not used to the surroundings. He had injury issues as well throughout the season. If he's looking healthy, I'm going to have a lot of shares of Weiying Chen.
You know, I really don't disagree with either of those takes. I would be the person who was heavily invested in Conley last year, so there's still burn marks, are still healing, because I tended to catch him and start him during stretches where he had those excruciating starts where he was obviously fighting his control the whole time. And by the third inning, you're like, well, this is a matter of if he gives up 4 earned runs in 5 innings or 8 earned runs in 3 innings. Kind of starts where I started him, even though everyone really enjoyed his, you know, his skill set. And he's in that group of young pitchers that has shown signs that we're trying to figure out where they're going to land. You know, that group is led by Aaron Nola and Kevin Gausman, but definitely goes through guys like Conley and guys beyond Conley. So I don't think you're going to be alone on your take on Conley. I think I'm not going to own him, but I won't blame anyone else for owning him. But my pitcher, the pitcher that's going to make you think that I deserve to go right to the loony bin, my pitcher is Tom Kohler. It's odd for me to say that because I've always had – part of it is the perception of him. I think you will have to scroll down significantly further to get to Tom Kohler on an ADP list. And I'm looking towards the fact that he's been durable. He's had ERAs in the past that were in the 3.75 range. And last year was the opposite for me of Conley. When I saw Tom Kohler pitch last year, he was actually pretty good. He came off he had 7.5 Ks per 9, which is the most that he's had, and in a full season anyway, since his rookie year back in 2011 or 12, I believe it was. But my point with Tom Kohler is if you look at how he trended last year, in July and August, he was actually quite good. His ERA was under 3.5 for those 2 months, and for 1 month, he found his control, only walked 7 batters in August, and all of a sudden he really had it dominated at a time when they really needed him because they were trying to stick in the wild card race. So he's one of these roster fill guys, deep draft and hold, keep on your radar guy in smaller leagues. But I think for stretches of the season next year, we may have seen some growth out of Tom Kohler, and that's a name probably most people out there weren't expecting to be to be bolstered, to be somebody that I was actually fostering some support in. So how soon do I need to run for a straitjacket? Do you see anything here?
I don't necessarily see a ton in terms of upside. I think Kohler's one of those guys that in a 15-team league makes a nice end of your rotation.
Sure. So,
which I'm fine with, especially considering the price. You know, I did find him. It took me a little while, but he's 148th pitcher off the board. Starting pitcher off the board, 573rd overall. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy that isn't going to be drafted in the majority of leagues, which to me, that's I like that kind of guy. You know, you pick him up with your last pick or you stream him when he's at home, you know, when he's playing against bad competition. Kohler just doesn't have very exciting stuff. And so he's going to have issues with blow up starts. You look at his last kind of month from September on, he gives up 5 earned runs, 4 earned runs, 3 earned runs, 2 earned runs, 4 earned runs. You know, he offers a little bit of strikeouts, but nothing that to me, signifies like this is a guy that gives me something I really need other than innings. You know, because we in deeper formats, we need innings. We need the production, even if it's kind of slow and steady at certain spots. But, you just don't want to take a blank. In shallower formats, if you're in a 12-team league, there's no way he's anything more than a spot start in a fantastic matchup at home. In 15-team leagues, he's, like I said, potentially end of your bench guy or a streamer. It's one of those things at the end of my draft, if I see him there and there's no one else around that I like, then sure. But I mean, even in that area, I mean, there's guys that are interesting, more interesting to me personally. I mean, I've always been a Jimmy Nelson guy. He's going around that same area. Brett Honeywell, if you're into prospects, is going around that area. Drew Hutchinson, I'd really like to see him get a full season with Pittsburgh, and I think we might this year. So, I mean, you know, even Jeff Hoffman, who I know you like Colorado pitchers, you know, he's going around that area. So, I mean, to me, at least those guys have some upside that I don't think Kohler necessarily does.
No, there's no doubt about that. I mean, again, you know, it's going to be a roster construct thing, even in, you know, 15 team draft and holds. It's going to be like, okay, I've got a ton of risk in my pitching. If you end up with the Strasburgs, you end up with a lot of people who, you know, have big time potential. Even, you know, if you're worried about Syndergaard holding up this year, you know, DeGrom, guys like that, you know, Carrasco or Salazar, you know, etc. Then maybe you want a guy who you look and you say, wow, this guy's really actually been quite durable. And I might just need somebody that I know is going to be out there. You know, NL only formats is another thing you touched on. But yeah, let's
well, I mean, and that's the thing too. I mean, like, if you're looking for durability, he's given 175 innings or more in the last three seasons.
Yeah, and so, that's at that area of the draft, that's not that easy to find.
No, and that's the thing. Like, if you're looking for upside at the end of the draft, Tom Kohler's not your guy. But if you're looking for an innings eater, a guy that you know will give you something throughout the entire season, you know, in case of injuries, you know, your NFBC draft and hold leagues, he's the perfect dude for that.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
You do need to have, you know, those steady eddies in case, you know, you lose guys and you need the innings.
Yeah, and I can tell you from NFBC, since you can't, you can switch your players twice a week, but you can't switch your pitchers more than once a week, that your hope is that he runs a longer stretch of July and August where you can use him for two starts. You know, when you say to yourself, okay, well, he's got the Mets at home and he's got the Phillies on the road. Well, you know, maybe he doesn't do great against the Phillies, but you're going to take your chances with him with the Mets at home. So you can use him to get that extra boost to try and make up ground if you want to. Now, the interesting thing, you talked about Wei-Yin Chen, and their free agent pickup is a guy named Edinson Volquez. You know, I remember him wearing his hat on the side, pitching, I believe, one of the first wild card games as a starter for the Reds way back when. Traded for Josh Hamilton at one point. I mean, he's had kind of, you know, he was a World Series hero. But it's interesting because his numbers have really tailed off in recent years. And so he doesn't seem to have the factory behind him that we had with Wei-Yin Chen. Wei-Yin Chen was a really, you know, sleeper-friendly kind of guy going into last year's draft. So Edinson Volquez and Wei-Yin Chen, the Marlins sort of offer that sort of weird low-end starting pitcher kind of, you know, kind of tier thing going on where it's kind of pick your flavor and go with how your roster is built. I don't think Edinson Volquez's whip will ever be usable again. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, Volquez is a guy that I've liked for a long time. But, like, you know, over at Fangraphs, they give you kind of, like, pitch values per pitch, like where they rank, you know, in terms of, like, you know, all the other pitches or pitchers at that pitch. And he's got like a negative 22, which is like god awful for his fastball. I mean, he's just like, I mean, you look at some of like his pitch values and they're pretty much all in the negative except for his changeup. So he's got like a decent changeup and the rest is just god awful. I mean, he's in the park in a division in which I think he may actually, you know, be able to be streamable at times. But, you know, at this point in his career, I think he's just lost some things. And I think he's one of those guys that you can't draft. And really, I mean, outside of, like, maybe as a last pick in a draft and hold format, you can't really draft him. You just kind of got to wait and see. I mean, his peripheral numbers were much better than his actual numbers, but they were still bad. So, I mean, like, really bad. And so, I mean, like, I mean, there's no real reason to draft him in any format. If he seems to be getting on a run, if he seems to maybe, you know, be benefiting from the change back to the National League and into the NL East, and, you know, maybe there's some extra life on his fastball or something, you know, maybe he becomes a guy worth streaming every now and then because the stadium is so nice. But for the most part, I don't think he is worth talking about this much.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I'm going to have to lean on you for this last bit before we get out of here. I like to think that I'm catching up on minor league systems all across baseball. Now, I have heard jokes about how bad the Marlins minor league system is, but I can honestly say that the only major league team that I'm not overly familiar with any of their minor league players, the only team that's that way for me is the Miami Marlins. So now, you know, you're more than welcome to rake me over the coals here and prove me wrong. But are there minor league guys on the Marlins that should be on my radar for this coming season that I've just scrambled out of my skull? What's going on here?
I mean, for this season, probably not. I mean, I'm kind of looking over the roster resource, kind of list in terms of, you know, guys that might be in, or, you know, that they've got in the minor league system that might be interesting. And really the only guy that is jumping out to me was in rookie ball last year. And he's a 19-year-old guy. You know, he's a deep dynasty league stash. His name is Thomas Jones. He's a 19-year-old, I want to say like out of the University of Colorado or something like that, but I've completely lost where he was drafted. I like him as a guy who, if he can learn the zone a little bit better, that could offer some interesting power potential. The only reason I even know about him is because I play in one of the deepest dynasty leagues I've ever seen. It's actually a keeper league, not a dynasty league, but an extremely deep keeper league with huge minor league rosters. And I got him in like the fourth or fifth round of our rookie draft last year. After doing some research on guys that were going late that might be interesting, and like I said, this is a league in which we roster 100 players between major league and minor league, and so like we're rostering rookie ball guys, low A guys, you know, pretty much virtually everybody. There's 30 teams in this league rostering 100 people, so. You know, he's an interesting, really kind of deep stash or someone to put on your watch list. He's 19 years old. He's not going to be up anytime soon. But as far as I know, there's not really any impact coming this year from the minor league system.
Yeah, you know, and that's basically what I have heard. So, and I appreciate this because on multiple times in our interactions, you put me in my place and you let me know about some stuff that I should know of. And in this case, you at least bolstered the fact that I'm not missing a lot since I'm not currently in a dynasty league, although Matt Thompson, our prospect guy, has been threatening to get me in a startup one. And that's how I've always wanted to do it. I've always wanted to join one where I could be with it when it starts up instead of inheriting a bad team that someone dropped.
That's actually one of my like no-nos nowadays is – because I used to be one of those people, like, someone would be like, oh, I've got a league opening, anybody want it? And I'd jump on it, and I'd be stuck with these awful teams for 3 or 4 years. And so now my rule is I will never, ever, ever again take on an existing team,
yeah. You know? And I don't blame you for that. I mean, you know, Dynasty is such a time thing. You have to devote so much time to it, and I would prefer to make my own mistakes, and when I make my own mistakes, then I will spend years to make up for them. But usually the teams that are dropped are not the teams that are stacked, which is ironic because a team that I took over years ago with a friend of mine named Perry Misner, we started a team, and my first two draft picks that year were Chris Bryant and Mookie Betts. And then after that, I got frustrated with the rest of the team around them before they got up. So that's probably the team I should have stuck with. But regardless of all that, Justin, I think we kind of had an improv thing going here today where we didn't know for sure which team we were doing, et cetera. But as I suspected, your knowledge base once again carried the day, sir. What are you I'll play your role again. What are you working on now, and where can we – see more of your stuff? You must be over at all those pro sites, right?
Well, you can read most of my baseball stuff goes up on FanGraphs on the fantasy side over there, which is called RotoGraphs. So you can definitely read a lot of the stuff I've got going up over there. I'll have an article that has gone up by the time this is heard. I haven't finished writing it. I've actually barely even started. That should be going up. I have an article that goes up every Wednesday over there. I'm going to do some more writing for friendsoffantasybenefits.com in terms of the baseball side. But most of the time I'm doing, you know, podcasts here, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 7 a week. And I'm responsible for a lot of the editing and of the written and podcast content. And so that tends to take up a lot of my time. But you can definitely check out everything we've got on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Full ranks went up earlier this week, so definitely check that out. Your ranks are on there. My ranks are on there. My ranks are also going to go on Fantasy Pros at some point, definitely check that out. And give us a rate and review for the podcast. It really helps us out, especially if it's the 5-star variety.
Yeah, we like those the best. Although constructive criticism is welcome as well.
Be as constructive as you want with that 5 stars. Like, give exactly. us 5 stars and tell me I suck. I'm totally fine with that.
Well, as Justin knows, outside of my work with Friends with Fantasy Benefits, I do a blog that covers a lot of Midwest area sports, but also sports in general, called Just Chucking It, out there. And the reason that I mention that is that at Just Chucking It is my Twitter handle as well. So if you see that stuff starting to come up on the site, which we're working on presently, and you want to be a subscriber to your email box, you can always send me your email address via Twitter, and I will put you on the mail out list, which I do those once every couple weeks, whenever something really, I call them rants, because it's more like a sports editorial column, where I will definitely lay into Roger Goodell on a regular basis and lay into a bunch of other sports figures. So don't expect it to be necessarily, a quiet or kind of a mainstream thing. I will be out on the limbs, on the edges, letting you know where sports has really ticked me off. So that is an availability to you guys as well. I'm always open, and I'm doing some stuff for Banished to the Pen, and I'm always open to suggestions from Justin on stuff that he wants to see written about. So hopefully I contributed enough to keep pulling my weight. I've really enjoyed my time at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and Justin has been a main cog in that as well. So anyway, this is Chuck Anderson and Justin Mason. We are signing off. This was the Miami Marlins preview show. Hopefully we've added to your knowledge of a team that does not necessarily draw as much fantasy attention as some of the big boys over in the American League, but there are diamonds to be found in the rough, and we're trying to lead you the right direction. So thanks for everyone. We wish everyone a happy 2017 as we're recording this just a couple days after the start of the new year. So everyone enjoy, and thank you so much, Justin. We will talk to you soon.